to Influential Visions. My name is Tyler Cohen Wood. Here, we interview futuristic leaders to share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring that you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. And here's your host today, Nat Schooler.
Well, today I am privileged to be joined by Jonathan Silver, and he is the founder and CEO of Affinity Solutions. Welcome, Jonathan.
Hello, nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. So Affinity is the authoritative source of truth related to consumer purchase intelligence, right? And your vision is to use data to improve people's lives. And you're a Wharton graduate, both in engineering and an MBA. So yeah, I'm looking forward to learning more about what you guys do over there and how you can enrich people's lives with data. So I've got a talking point here.
I just want to say one thing. You know, it used to be that the Wharton MBA or the Wharton graduate was a real plus, and then you know Donald Trump is out there, you know, saying he's a Wharton graduate. That kind of got in the, you know, it's kind of tarnishing the Wharton brand. I apologize if I'm offending any
Trump. I'm sorry. I wouldn't worry. No. It'll be okay. I didn't even connect the two dots, really. But I try to avoid. I mean, thing is, my dad's from Long Island. His family had a factory over there back in the day. And so I've got a lot of relatives in the States, and I'm half American, and I kind of like some of them want to vote one way and some want to vote the other. And, you know, so it's a crazy, crazy state of affairs. So I don't get involved with.
Yeah, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
We're all good. So how did you build Affinity? I know, you know, maybe you start with like what it is. I know you've got 90 million cardholders anonymized data records, and that's quite interesting.
Yeah, so I'll get to how we started, but today our business, as you pointed out, is to in the context of using data to improve people's lives, is to help businesses build deeper relationships with consumers, so that especially in a COVID world, but always retain and grow their market share and to improve their overall health. One of the core assets is this incredibly valuable data set that we have, which, as you just mentioned, is 90 million consumers in the US, debit and credit card holders. We have another 4 million in the UK, so we're expanding internationally. And the reason that type of data is so important is because it's a source of truth for how people buy. So if we're serving a business that's looking to make better decisions, the ability to make decisions, you know, how are their competitors doing relative to them? You need a truth data set. You need to know what's happening outside your own businesses, your own store. And so our ability to give that clarity on how their customers are shopping at competitors, and the ability to use that data to make their marketing more relevant and to measure their advertising, that data set's extremely valuable. And so we have a set of products. We refer to it collectively as Insights to Action, where we can allow companies, let's say McDonald's, to go into the data, and maybe they're losing market share to Wendy's and Burger King among millennials in Chicago and Los Angeles. That's an example, real life situation. We can help them take action on that insight by helping identify people that are likely eating at Burger King and Wendy's that happen to be millennials in Chicago and Los Angeles, so that we can stem the share loss that's occurring and measure it and be able to show in real time, did it work? So that data set, the source of truth and authoritative repository for purchase activity, is a key foundation for insights and marketing solutions.
Very interesting. So it's not easy to sort of match up these kind of data sources, right? So saying I came to you and I was Denny's, right? How could you help me? I mean, I love Denny's. Yeah, it's brilliant. And the reason I love it, right, is because they have this lemonade mango. Yeah, and they put the mango juice in the bottom. Yeah. Right. But like, what would you do if I was Denny's and I said, look, I need you to help me. I'm trying to understand more about my consumers. What would you help me with?
Yeah. So if you're Denny's, we talk about this idea of share of stomach. I mean, as great as Denny's is, as much as you love the lemonade mango, you're not going to eat there every day. What we try and do is start from the premise of giving real-time information, not just for Denny's as a whole, but for each location at Denny's, right? Because you can have one Denny's that's doing a lot better than another. And because most stores, restaurants have a trade area around them, the dynamics of those trade areas are going to vary from store to store. So giving them real-time insights and visibility at the individual store level, where they can see their share of stomach compared to, say, Bennigan's or, you know, other family casual. But there's also, you know, you may go to an Asian restaurant one day and you may eat at home another day. So we look holistically at how a consumer's wallet is being spent across restaurants and across grocers. We did a project with Deloitte. We serve a number of these large consulting firms in the U.S. with our insights, Deloitte, Accenture, McKinsey, Bain. With Deloitte, we did work with a grocer, can't say who, and they found that a lot of their competition is not just other grocers, but it's QSRs and restaurants. Same thing in reverse. Denny's would want to see how people are dividing their food budget between grocers and restaurants and among restaurants, their competition. So giving them that visibility, seeing how their customers and prospects are transacting across competitors, as I've just defined it, is a starting point. And then the next step is, well, what do I do with those insights? How do I take action? And so, you know, if Denny's is seeing a share that's shifting to a particular competitor, maybe I turn up the volume on my marketing. We have a product called Shopper Segments and Shopper Spectrum, where we can, if, you know, Bennigan's is the one taking share away from Denny's, we can find people likely eating at Bennigan's in the demographic where they're losing share, and help them target their digital marketing. If they advertise on TV, help them target their addressable TV advertising, and stem the share loss. So it's really about solving problems or exploiting opportunities that we see in the insights through better targeting, better marketing, and then measuring it. That's the third step, by being able to connect the dots between those who saw the ad and their purchase information. Did they actually get up and eat? There are the other thing that I think related is McDonald's saw a share loss, not to their hamburger competitors. We were able to show them it wasn't to Burger King and Wendy's. It was actually to Popeyes, which was not a restaurant that McDonald's thought was a competitor. Turned out that Popeyes introduced the chicken sandwich, and the chicken sandwich, for whatever reason, appealed to McDonald's customers. So once we redefined the competition, well, in their case, they introduced their own chicken sandwich. McDonald's is able to address that with a change in their product. So it really depends on what the insights tell you. The action can vary from change in product mix, the way you market, how you measure, how you optimize. So that's what I might do. I also might tell you to take the mango juice out of the bottom of the lemonade, because I'm not a big mango guy. But,
oh,
no, sorry.
It's a real shame. Yeah. I love the unlimited refills. Yeah. Like that. It's just epic. Right. But it does vary. I'm not going to lie, between Denny's, it does vary between restaurant, you know?
Yeah.
But, so onto the next thing, right? So you've got this vision, right, for using data to improve people's lives. Right. How is that going to improve people's lives?
Yeah, so I'll break it down. Today, we have an initiative called Data for Good. We were very committed during the coronavirus, which is obviously still continuing in earnest. We were very committed to giving our data, some of our data away to not-for-profits, scientists, academics, researchers, to help with government policymaking and just generally creating more awareness. One of those was with Harvard and Brown University, where we put a spotlight on how people at different income levels were responding to the coronavirus. Turns out the higher income people had a much more dramatic drop in their spending as a result of the coronavirus and had a much slower recovery compared to lower income folks, which had a ripple effect on the economy because a lot of the higher income spending that declined and that didn't catch up was at discretionary categories like restaurants, where lower income people might be a waiter, or at a nail salon where there might be. So it actually had an impact when the higher income folks spent less. It turned out that the lower income people who depended on the spending of the higher income were affected. So today, Data for Good is about giving those insights away. We do that also with a business recovery scorecard. Every week, we track the spending across a variety of categories and merchants. The broader mission and vision of Affinity on using data for good is I am 100% convinced, we are at Affinity Solutions, that we are entering into a world of hyper-personalization. And while today our focus is in the commerce domain, I always tell a story. I was at the CES conference in Vegas, and the CEO of Delta Airlines was on stage before the world ended, talking about the future of travel. And he was describing a technology that they were about to introduce in Detroit Airport and LAX, called Parallel Reality, where Jonathan and Nathaniel can both be standing in front of the same billboard. You know, you're looking at the billboard, and everything you see on the billboard is personalized for Nathaniel and nothing else. What gate you have to be at, what time you have to be at the gate, the restaurant down the terminal that has foods matching your preferences, what the weather is in the destination city. I'm standing right next to you. I'm looking at the same billboard, and I see things that only relate to me, Jonathan Silver, and not Nathaniel. We're not wearing special glasses. Don't ask me how it works. But the point is that here was the physical place that was changed. Imagine now applying that to retail, even though travel has been on pause. Imagine walking into a store and having it become, the Jonathan Silver store or the Nathaniel store, where everything is presented through this parallel reality. So in the commercial domain, we're entering into a world of hyper-personalization on a more beneficent example is making sure people with limited budgets are getting what they need. But we see that extending into medicine. We think there'll be all kinds of personalized medicine in a way that hasn't been done to date. Education, the educational system of today, we think will look prehistoric in 5 to 10 years. It'll be highly personalized to young adults and children's aptitudes, interests, and skill sets in a way that will harness the power of people to make a difference in a way that hasn't been done. So whether it's commerce, whether it's medicine or health, and whether it's education, that's what we're committed to. And what's really cool about our data, while we talk about purchase data, we also have the ability to match that data to all these other data types. So today we've appended thousands of demographic, behavioral, and lifestyle data. We're looking to append SKU level data, location data. The underpinning of that is what we call a personal data cloud. So, it's your data, you have the right to permission it. It'll be kind of like a next generation app store where someone will come to you and say, hey, check out this really cool experience. When you walk into Home Depot, they recognize you by name. They make recommendations. Where someone will say, check out this personal health app. It'll make recommendations on nutrition, exercise, stress management, and sleep that will be intended to mitigate the risk of certain health risks that you may have, education, so on. Someone will say, hey, check this out. And when you check it out, you will provision your data from your personal data cloud to get that experience. That's what's coming. And that's why we're excited. It's not just about purchase data. It's across all these different data types. And I'll just say one more thing on the medical piece. It'll be your medical records with your permission, your DNA, your biometrics, all that converging with your permission to get access to these really cool and beneficial experiences.
Very interesting. I've been thinking about all this for years, really, because the thing is, some people are just scared. They're scared to give their data away, right? But then, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine and on a podcast, actually, and he was saying that he likes the world of open data because he wants, to be given a recommendation that he needs to buy something when when he's just about to run out, because based upon his last purchase history, you know, he likes that, right? Me, I'm kind of, I think that they can, it can freak people out, right? It can be too intrusive. Yeah. So I think the education process has got a long way to go, really, to educate people of the benefits to, you know, giving up some control of their data, really. That's in my mind.
Yes, and I think, you know, there's reason to be concerned. So we are 100% committed to data sets being made available with consumer permission. I think, you know, we've obviously seen abuses of data, and just like any technology that has the opportunity to change the world, there's going to be, you know, ebbs and flows, and there's going to be people who will create questions. We saw that, you know, with the 2016 election with Cambridge Analytica. We've seen other examples of that. But I think more and more, it's like anything else. If I'm getting this incredible benefit, then I'm willing to provide the permission to my for my data. And it's also a matter of who you're giving it to, who you trust. So Affinity Solutions, we believe, will become a trusted intermediary that will act as an advocate and an ombudsman, if you will, for the consumer, to ensure that your data is used only in the way that you've consented or permission, and also to vet the applications, the solutions, the services that are being made available that will access the data. And lastly, to do so in a very privacy controlled way. So it's not like handing someone, if Affinity Solutions is the intermediary, we wouldn't just, you know, give someone's data. We would make it available in a limited way only to support the particular application that the consumer signed up for.
Right. I understand. It's, I think the future is quite bright when it comes to this sort of stuff, but I think there are other people that are just absolutely pessimistic, excuse me, very negative, aren't they, about, you know, they're paranoid about their data, and they're like, well, you know, if they know this about me and blah, 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 but they don't really realize that actually anonymized data still gives power to the advertiser, right? Because if you can segment the audience to the right level, then you can help their behavior in a certain way anyway, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, it's the, on the one side, the value of the services, and on the other side, the protection of the data. On the value of the services, I'm going to tell you today, if you have me on and 3 years, we'll look backwards at what I said today. We're just at the tip of the iceberg. There is going to be, like I said, this renaissance of applications and solutions across these domains. On the other side, which is the protection of the data, as an example, we not only anonymize it, but because the data sets need to be connected across different domains, you know, people know, I think at this point, that when you sign up for an app on your phone, that often, most often, the app that you're signing up for, you're giving permission through the terms and conditions for your location data to be made available to third parties. That's one of the elements of the business model, and it's very difficult for those apps to resist. But you have to trust that the data is anonymized, and we've seen that it can be re-identified, and that's scary. So for us, we not only anonymize it, we hash it, we perturb the data, we modify the dollar amounts, for example, in the transaction data from the credit card companies. We call it perturbation. We modify the dates. So the transaction that you did on Tuesday actually in the data shows up as if it happened on a Wednesday. So even though it's anonymized, we wanted to eliminate the possibility that if someone had access to a transaction and they could match it to some third-party transaction data, they couldn't even do that. They couldn't even match it on, you know, dates and dollar amounts and so forth. So it's using technology to really transform the data to something that is analytically valuable for the consumer, for the business, but can't be re-identified.
Very useful. It's very, very useful because it's secure.
Let it go, Nathaniel. Don't let it go.
Okay. I've got to keep calm. I'm getting a wrinkle here. It's a stress wrinkle, yeah? So helping brands and CMOs get ahead of consumer behavior shifts that are happening constantly in the pandemic, right? You've been sort of doing a lot of work around that. And what's the most exciting thing about that for you?
Yeah, well, you know, we've said for years that if you're a business, you have to have data outside your own data. You have to have outside in data, external data sets. Obviously, purchase activity that shows how your customers are shopping at not just competitors, but across different categories, as well as people that are not your customers, is a critical ingredient. During the coronavirus, what happened, obviously, is that people started showing up. So the data set that those businesses were using to run their business, their own data, disappeared. You know, people didn't come to their stores, didn't go to their websites. So they were forced to look externally. Whereas before, we, you know, they certainly should have been, but now they had to. And so what we've seen is a tremendous spike in demand starting, you know, mid-March, April, May, among businesses that need that outside in view, whether directly from Affinity or through our partners, like the consulting firms I mentioned. We work with Deloitte, Accenture, Bain, McKinsey, and other marketing companies. We're starting to see some really interesting things. Obviously, there's a shift to online spending. We're starting to see a blend, right? A lot more, you know, buy online, pick up in store, drive through, things that kind of blend this idea of e-commerce versus brick and mortar. We're starting to see businesses that are outperforming others. Excuse me. So for example, in the QSR category, and specifically pizza, you know, Domino's and Papa John's are examples of companies. Papa John's changed their entire delivery system. Of course, they always did home delivery, but they changed their delivery system so it was entirely contactless. No human hands touch the pizza. You can order it. You know, I want my pizza delivered to the front door, the side door, the back door. They made it more personalized. They have this throne thing that they put the pizza on so they don't have to touch, let you take it, not from the delivery guy, but from the throne that's on your front porch. So, you know, what we're seeing is that it's not just about marketing. It's not just about using data to make the ad more personalized. They're actually using the data to change their entire end-to-end customer experience and delivery system. And that's a big change because what's happened is the whole enterprise, these businesses, you know, again, used to be marketing, the guys that are using data to, you know, learn how to do better ads. Now what's happened is you've got the real estate guys involved. Where should I open stores? Where should I close stores? You've got the supply chain guys involved. What products should I sell? And the merchandising, obviously, on the front end. You've got the customer experience, right? You know, CEOs are most interested in differentiating their customer experience. All of that data is now being used to the consumer at the center across the entire enterprise. That's a big, big change.
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. Customer experience is very, very interesting in terms of actually people listening to the customers. It's what differentiates them, right, from their competitors. But you made me hungry now thinking about pizza. What?
You brought up Denny's. I want to go and have a lemonade mango now that
you don't like mango juice though.
I don't, but I'm willing to you know, be flexible.
It's good.
Unfortunately, I don't think there's a Denny's too close to me. But
do you know, a lot of people look down on Denny's, right? But I think they do this fantastic grilled chicken actually with avocado and stuff. Yeah. It's very good. I was quite surprised. But this American family, I was with my sister, right? We were traveling through Nevada, yeah. And this whole family of Americans, yeah, they were like, let us buy your dinner for you. And I was like, what? It's a bit round. Wow. Yeah, it was. And they were like, you're from England, and I was. It was priceless.
Really. It's amazing how an English accent, what that gets you. I'm going to try it. I think.
Oh, you do a Scottish one.
Well, I do a Scottish one. I assume if you want, I can show you. But it does work. You know, when I did my, did you want to hear it?
Is that what? Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, seriously, I'm from Glasgow for a while and I live in Edinburgh. But then, if I use this accent, it's unbelievable because people will pay for my dinner as well. You're not the only guy. Listen, this is a serious show, but in all seriousness, you know, I do not look down on Denny's, but there is, the restaurant industry is a really interesting one because you really can see shifts consumers can easily shift their spending on restaurants. It's not like, you know, the Home Depot, you know, is right down the street. Lowe's Home Improvement is, you know, an extra 3 miles. I'm not going to change my habits as quickly. But restaurants, you can flip around very easily with the right promotion. That's weird. So I think restaurants is a great category to talk about, because there's so much opportunity to change behavior and also screw up. But I do want to make sure I emphasize this enterprise, this idea of not just customer experience, but the breaking down of the silos across the enterprise between, you know, merchandising and real estate and supply chain and customer experience and marketing has been a sea change in the way businesses are thinking about using data.
Yeah, well, I'm very interested. I think this can do a lot of good stuff for the supply chain, right? I think that excites me. Yeah, from an environmental point of view, from many angles, actually.
Yeah, I was saying my wife is the head of the environmental committee in our town, and so we compost. If I, God forbid, throw out something that should be recycled in the wrong bin, I'm excommunicated. And my point there is that if a business were to talk to her in the context of sustainability and environmental sensitivity, you'd have her at hello. And so why I mention that is, you know, in this environment, particularly this idea of emotional resonance, we call it affinity, your affinity, right? What floats your boat? What your life stage, your lifestyle, your passion. My wife is about environmental. For me, I refuse to share here, but if you were to connect with me based on what's most important to me, I'm kidding, it's yoga, it's data, it's business, you know, you'll get my attention. So that that notion of, you know, businesses being able to connect with their customers in a way that aligns with what they are emotionally connected to is one of the things we're seeing, you know, businesses get much smarter about and organizing their customer experience towards.
Fantastic. That's I agree completely. The closer you can get to people, the more they want to do business with you, right? Because it's like having fun, isn't it, at the end of the day? I mean, that's what people want to do, yeah? You know?
Yeah, we did a program for a bank called us up and they said, hey, we have this credit card portfolio that consumers signed up for originally as the REI credit card. REI is a big outdoor products retailer. But we, the bank, Chase, lost the relationship with REI, but all these people signed up for a card that was specifically geared to outdoor enthusiasts. So we had to go out and find 140 retailers offering discounts on hiking and climbing and canoeing and so on. And services like a trip planning service where you could, you know, check off, I don't have the sleeping bag in the tent, but I have the backpack in the stove. So where can I find the sleeping bag in the tent at a great discount? And how can I plan my trip? And so that was an example of where we organized the value prop and a customer experience that's attached to a pretty, you know, low emotional content product like a credit card, attached to the affinity, in this case around outdoor, outdoor living, that was most important to those customers.
Super. So you're planning on rolling this out around the GDPR stuff that's going on, the regulations around Europe, and you're sort of in process of doing that. And I know I've heard that it's not as difficult than the Californian regulations in this respect. So hopefully it shouldn't be too difficult for you to launch this, right?
Yeah, I mean, actually, it's a matter of debate whether GDPR is more onerous than the California Consumer Privacy Act. I think in some ways, you know, the GDPR is more onerous because it requires consumer opt-in, whereas CHCPA is opt-out. But, you know, like I said earlier, you know, we're so sensitive to anything that is either A, not compliant with the law, but it's more than that. It's really about consumer control of data, personal data cloud that you own and control. And we have we actually go on a little further. We conceptualize this idea of a personal operating system, when you think about an operating system, you usually think about it as associated with a device, right? Windows for your laptop and iOS for your iPhone, and Amazon has something in the cloud. Imagine a personal operating system, something that's geared to a consumer. And so in that context, your personal data cloud is the foundation of it. It's your data. And then there's, you know, as you think about the operating system, the next layer of the stack, if you will, is consent management and privacy controls that act as the gateway for access to your data. And then above that is machine learning tools that basically personalize the world for Nathaniel or for Jonathan. And so that idea of a personal operating system, it fully, you know, anchors everything that we do around the consumer, not just, you know, and you're in the driver's seat. So in that regard, you know, if we are true to our principles, the regulations become almost a non-issue because we're going further than what the regulations require.
Right. Right. It makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense. I think people want control. Right. And, I think it's, exciting. Yeah. Really exciting.
Well, and the way we're approaching this, which I, you know, is, it's not just the data. We are creating what we have not very imaginatively are calling our data platform. After, you know, hours of thinking and brainstorming, we came up with that brilliant creative name, data platform. the data platform is kind of think of it as middleware between, you know, companies that want to build applications that need data to power them, and the underlying data itself to be that middleware again with the tool sets for consent management and privacy controls and machine learning and all that other stuff and integrating with these other technologies like parallel reality and virtual reality and so on. And so what's exciting is, this was a big shift for us. We were creating those applications ourselves. And then I started to think, well, why do we have to be the ones to do it? Maybe other people might have a different take, maybe smarter in certain areas, may have other data sets to bring to the table, other technologies. And so the data platform is saying, let's open this up. Let's bring third-party companies in, big and small. One company will create an application that will do better personalization. Someone else may do something else for measurement, something else for insights. And so you start build this ecosystem of partners that we envision showing up as a marketplace. So, you know, marketplace where retailers, marketers in general, advertising agencies, and as we move into the medical arena, hospital, healthcare providers, and so on, can come and take advantage of this consortium of different businesses that have built unique solutions and applications on top of our data and technology. That's our journey, and we're excited.
I'm excited. I mean, it's a good point, good spot to end there on that.
I was having so much fun. Do we have to
say? What more do you need to say? Right? I mean, like, you know, you're basically helping the world with all of these different data sources. You're launching this open source revolution, right, within data. I mean, that's what I would call it personally. Yeah. And so then there will be like micro providers, like who are doing healthcare applications and who are doing all of these other things. And then they will be able to, in essence, draw upon this anonymized data farm, right? To create insights for healthcare as well, yeah? And whatever else, like supply chain and everything, right? Like any business that wants to use data can in essence tap into this. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, there's, you know, because, you know, when you start changing the view to being an enabler, a platform that enables others to do great things versus you having to do everything, A, it allows us to focus more and more our resources on building that perfect platform to enable others. And B, it opens it up to so many brilliant people out there and companies that have different take. So, you know, probably the one theme in all of it is the sort of mission to help businesses build deeper relationships, genuine relationships with consumers to help them, you know, grow, retain and grow their market share. But the underpinning is using data to improve people's lives. So as long as you're committed to those principles, yeah, it can cut across B2B applications. We're very interested in this in the commercial domain around media optimization, where we can help businesses tailor allocate their budgets more efficiently in real time to those marketing campaigns, those creatives, those audience publishers, timing, frequency, what's working in a post-COVID or COVID world. Every dollar counts, so you want to make sure you're allocating it. So that's on the B2B side. Other companies may build applications that are consumer-facing, whether it's personalizing the consumer experience when you walk into a store, or whether it's medicine, or whether it's education. By opening it up and having us not have to be the ones to do it, the sky's the limit, but it kind of is.
It's a big undertaking.
Well, it's a big undertaking, but we're inviting a lot of people to the party, and it's not really about, I want to be clear, it's not a marketplace to sell data. It's a marketplace to enable solutions to be created on top of data. And then the marketplace becomes those solutions and those applications versus the data. There's other companies out there, which it doesn't interest me, and I don't think it's where things are going, which are data marketplaces. That's certainly not consistent with consumer control of data. And it also, isn't really the point, right? The point is to create solutions with that data in ways that haven't been done to date.
Right. So say I come to this marketplace, right? Is it going to be like some sort of dashboard where there are, say, 20, 30 different data sources, and I can just push a button and say, well, I want this, 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 and this, and I'm in this industry, and then it's going to kind of spit out insights? Or how do you see it kind of working?
Yeah, so I would think of it as two layers, right? Or maybe even three. The first layer are partners we bring in where, to be technical for a moment, we would hand them our APIs, or we would hand them an SDK, software development kit, that would have all the technical mumbo jumbo on how they can connect with the data, the types of data we have. And then, we would provide a professional service to help that partner, depending on their objective, if they're building, an application to improve personalization of ads, or if they're building, we would, certainly share best practices on which data sets can help them do that. We wouldn't give them the data, but we would certainly make it clear what data sets are available to support their application. Once that application is built, that's layer one, then that application, think of it like an app store, except that the customers are now other businesses. So the next layer after those partners are ad agencies, businesses, retailers, any number of companies that would then buy from the application providers, the first layer. This would be the next layer down. And maybe the fourth layer would be the consumer that would get the benefit of all of these great applications. So it's kind of a multi-layer. So the first step is more of a technical integration through APIs and SDKs with partners that would then put their engineering resources to create some really cool things.
Right. And then, so if you wanted to and you were a business, you could turn around and say, well, actually, I like this application and that application and that application. And you could potentially build your own application to join those three together, right? Like, that's the kind of play that we're sort of thinking of, is it? Or
yeah, I mean, it's like a B2B app store, right? So I can, to your point, I guess, yeah, you could combine apps. But it's like, hey, there's this, and they could be rated, like, and imagine, at the B2B level.
Right.
And there could be ways to curate and prioritize the selections within this marketplace. And then at the consumer level, there would be a similar kind of, a set of applications that depend on data for personalization across these different domains. So it's, how that ultimately manifests itself, will continue to evolve. It'll be done in as seamless and easy a way for businesses and consumers to consume those applications.
Super. And at the moment, you've got masses of clients, right, over in the States. I mean, like, you've got Visa and all sorts of companies, right, who are using this already. Or,
well, the way I would describe it is we had sort of three journeys. We have a number of clients, and the first journey at Affinity Solutions was bringing all of our banks together to provide them. I didn't tell you how we got the data, but we have a set of services that we deliver to the banks, mm-hmm, that allow consumers to opt in and give permission for that purchase data to be shared in the first place. So we have a bunch of clients on the bank side, and Visa certainly is one of them, but various payment processors, 3,000 banks today. And then when we introduced the second journey, our own marketing solutions around insights, and that opened up. So we have partnerships with, as I mentioned, these consulting firms, their clients, McKinsey, Deloitte, Bain, Accenture, marketing companies like Epsilon, Experian. And now on this third journey that I've been describing, this data platform, it's early. We've got half a dozen partners that we are engaged with today that are already beginning their journey of creating applications on our data. So more to come. If you invite me on, which I would certainly be happy to accept, I hope 6 months from now or a year from now, that six will turn into, Affinity has hundreds of thousands of clients, but for this particular vision, I hope the six will become at least 30 to 50 primary partners that we will be enabling. And they in turn will have dozens of clients each.
Fantastic. Well, I'd be delighted to interview you again. It's been really interesting. And interestingly enough, I've actually got the person who's coming on before you. It works at Epsilon doing customer experience and social media. So that's interesting, right? The timing is particularly good. So
what are you doing tomorrow? I mean, no, I'm kidding.
I'm probably editing this and like getting that other episode out, So
it's been a pleasure. I've enjoyed very much our conversation. You've asked great questions, and we'll see how all of this unfolds, but we're super excited about it.
Super. And if people want to get hold of you, what's the best way to approach the business?
Yeah, well, we have a website, and there's a way to reach us through the website, through the contact us. www.affinitysolutions.com, affinitysolutions.com, or, and I don't do this all the time, but I will give you my personal email address, which is J Silver, first initial J for Jonathan, Silver, S-I-L-V-E-R, jsilver@affinitysolutions.com. Just say I'm a friend of Nathaniel.
Be nice. Not you. Thanks, Jonathan. It's been great.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections, and don't forget to drop us a review.